Wilburn et al. Versus Mangano, Breckenridge Ingalls, Appellant's Counsel, Richard H. Stewart, Appellee's Counsel. Mr. Garver, will you please bring Mr. Ingalls and Mr. Stewart into the courtroom? Please allow 30 seconds for the transfer. Mr. Chief Justice, it appears that all parties are present and accounted for.
All right, Mr. Ingalls, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Breckenridge Ingalls, I have the pleasure of representing the appellants on this appeal. The appellants are the daughters of Jean Mangano, who died in 2005. The question to be answered in this case is whether the term fair market value is a sufficiently certain term to support specific performance of a purchase agreement. Before specific performance will be ordered, the contract must either establish a purchase price or set forth a means by which a purchase price may be determined. That is well-established law in the state of Virginia. In this case, a purchase price was not specified in the codicil to Jean Mangano's will. So the question is whether the term fair market value, which was included in that codicil, sufficiently sets forth a means by which a purchase price may be determined. Appellants were not able to find any Virginia authority directly on point, although there's some caveat to that, and I'll mention that in just a moment. But we believe this is a case of first impression in Virginia. I would point out, Appellee cited a circuit that is, but of course, limited precedential authority. We examined in the brief analogous Virginia cases, and we also examined in the brief the rules adopted by out-of-state courts. In the brief, the analogous situations that the Virginia courts deal with frequently, where the courts are dealing with fair market value, uniform commercial code cases, shareholder agreements, condemnation cases, equitable distribution and divorce, and tax cases. And all of those types of cases, fair market value is a term that is used, and the courts regularly are called upon to make a determination as to fair market value.
Counsel, may I interrupt you with a question? That your last point, that courts are called upon to make a fair market value determination, you couldn't be more right. We do it all the time in condemnation cases, in equitable distribution cases, in property tax cases. But that's the point of a contract, isn't it? To avoid litigation? If the meeting of the minds is simply, let's agree on an indefinite concept that only paid experts can present to us and only a judge can resolve it, how is that a contract? That's an agreement to litigate fair market value. It's really not an agreement on price.
Well, I mean, the honest answer to that question is it certainly would be preferable to specify a price, but we often have situations, and I cited these out-of-state cases, where you've got an option agreement that's attached to a lease agreement. So the tenant has the right to purchase the property at the end of the lease. And we don't know what the value of the property is going to be at the end of the lease, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And so there are many instances similar to that where fair market value that term has to be used because we don't know what the value is going to be. Just as Ms. Mangano did not know what the value was going to be on her death, and so that's why she used that kind of a term.
Well, fair market value could serve as a substitute for an agreement on price if there's also an agreement on how fair market value is determined. So, for example, in the option contract, if you're doing like a stock purchase, it's simply referred to some nationally recognized indices. But if you're dealing with real property, you could simply say, as determined by appraiser John Doe. And that would be perfectly sufficient. And it wouldn't go to litigation because John Doe could get the last word.
It would, except it is quite possible that either the buyer or the seller would think John Doe's appraisal is off, or John Doe may be dead by the time that option is exercised, or if you leave it to the fair market value, then you have the safeguard of a judge making that determination and not having some ridiculous figure that is adopted because the appraiser had a bad day.
That's a fair point, but frankly, do we want to adopt a rule that says that we're going to have the courts of Virginia litigate every single fair market value dispute on property? That would be quite a different approach as far as I'm familiar.
Well, the Virginia courts do it all the time. They're certainly equipped to do it. Do we want to take it easy on judges and not make them work so hard? Sure. It would be nice in instances where that's possible to take that burden off the judges. I agree, but those of us who write contracts all the time run into this sort of thing, and you, in writing a contract, absolutely you want to specify a price. In the divorce world, where somebody writes fair market value in a separation agreement, I cringe, because the litigation that's involved in that may be as much as the litigation in the divorce itself, but there are instances where you don't have any choice but to write that in there. I much prefer a figure. The general rule of the states that have considered the matter is that contracts which specify fair market value to be paid are generally held to contain a sufficiently certain price for specific performance. And why is that? The modern trend of the law is to favor the enforcement of contracts, to lean against their unenforceability because of uncertainty, and to carry out the intentions of the parties if that can feasibly be done. I cited a number of out-of-state cases, as I said a minute ago. Most of those deal with options that are attached to lease agreements, options to purchase. I cited Good West Rubber. This is a California case. And I know how the Virginia courts feel about California cases, but it was a case of first impression in California. And the court was very succinct in its handling. It said, and I'm quoting now, option agreements have generally been held or recognized to be sufficiently definite as to price to justify their enforcement if either a specific price is provided in the agreement or a practicable mode is provided for the court to determine price without any new expression by the parties themselves. And the court continued, quote, fair market value is a well-established means of property valuation and is a common task performed by courts on a daily basis. I cited cases in California, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Wisconsin, and Tennessee that are all in accord.
But counsel, the point you're making, as I interpret it, is simply, let's make an agreement, and you and I are the contracting parties, but there's this backbencher court that's going to actually decide in the most essential term of the agreement, which is price. The idea is not working judges too much or not enough. The idea is roping the court system into a de facto party to every single agreement.
Well, I think I've addressed that a little bit before, but the other way I would address it is to say that if an appraisal is obtained and there is consensus as to the fair market value, there's nothing for the court to do.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often in the cases we see. If there's any dispute at all, they litigate it.
Well, again, for future instances like this one, Ms. Mangano in 2005, when she signed her codicil, didn't know whether she would live a month or a year or 10 years. And so establishing fair market value was one of the methods. The other method she'd used in the will, of course, which was the assessed value.
Why isn't that a good substitute? Use the assessed value. And if you're in a locale that the assessed value is frequently 10% lower than fair market value, you go assessed value plus 10%. I mean, it's not like this can't be done.
They certainly could have agreed to use the assessed value. They certainly could have agreed to use the assessed value plus or minus some percentage. They didn't do that. And when Mangano said in his letter, I'm going to exercise this option and I will purchase this property, he made it clear that he was okay with fair market value being the measure of what he would pay. I want to deal with a slightly different issue, and that is this. The appellee in, well, let me get to one thing first. The appellee cites Brown Enters, Inc. versus Hockman. It's a circuit court case. But in that case, the circuit court, this was Judge Wentzel, found that fair market value is enforceable. The problem in that contract was that they had printed terms that said one thing and they had typed terms that said something different. The typed terms left something to be negotiated between the parties, the printed terms did not. And the court found the typed terms controlled, but the court also said if the printed term controlled, then it was enforceable, and cited, I think, Williston on contracts and also Amger and ALR. I want to deal with one other issue, and that is appellee, and it's...
Excuse me, before you move on, you have been referring to, and I think all counsel, as a matter of fact, the trial judge do as well, referred to this as an option contract, but in fact it's a provision in a will that both parties did not execute, obviously, since it's a provision in a will. Does that matter?
Well, I mean, I think the general laws about options control. The codicil provided an option. The question is whether that option was exercised, and that's what I wanted to get deal with at this point. The appellee in the brief says that this was no more than a letter of intent, and that it never became a contract. And I think there are two problems with that. First of all, the judge took it as a matter of faith that there was a contract. And so on page 44 of the appendix, he simply states that, and I'm quoting now, the defendant cites to two provisions which are lacking in the enforcement of the acceptance of the offer from the codicil, namely lack of time limit for closing and value to the property. And the judge then goes on and says, well, time limit is not an issue because we imply a reasonable time. So the only question before the court was whether fair market value was sufficient for enforcement. Of course, you know how the court came down on that. But the court never ruled and apparently was never asked to rule on the issue of whether the option was exercised and whether it became a contract or not. That was never decided by the court, and of course there was no objection by appellee when the order was entered, and of course there's no cross appeal. But the second problem with appellee's argument, I see I'm running out of time, is that the contract was formed when the letter was written. He says, I will purchase. There are no conditions or caveat. He doesn't say, I will purchase if I can for the price or we agreement or we agree as to the appraisal. And he cites Bowles versus Mason and a provision in that cites Parker versus Murphy. And that seems to support our position that a contract was formed. I'll just read that briefly. It says, while this is not a contract of sale in its true sense, but a mere option, which in no case becomes a complete contract of sale and binding on optionee until he notifies the optionor of his purpose to exercise it. Until he notifies the optionor of his purpose to exercise it. And that's exactly what that letter did. That letter said, I intend to exercise the option. So either for those two reasons, we say that issue is not before the court. That issue has been waived. Based on the authority cited in state and out of state, we're asking that the court reverse and remand for trial that this court established in Virginia that fair market value is a sufficiently certain term to support specific performance. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Ingles, you have 45 seconds left for rebuttal. Mr. Stewart, we'll hear from you.
Please the court, good morning. I'm Richard Stewart and I represent the appellee, Anthony Mangano. In this case, it's clear that there was no price set in the option. And I would submit to this court that there was no viable method set to determine what the fair market value would be. Now, Mr. Ingles asserts you, but that's just absolutely wrong. Fair market value is an ambiguous term. It's generally determined by two willing buyers what a buyer and a seller can agree to in an arm's length transaction. We never got that far in this case because the parties never agree on what fair market value was. And they could agree on a method to determine fair market. Sisters in this case had an appraisal. That was fair market value. Apparently, Mr. Mangano disagreed and he refused to close. Now, under Mr. Ingles' theory that he puts before this court would compel Mr. Mangano purchase at the sister's price and on their terms. And that is an unconscionable result and is not something we want to proceed on in Virginia jurisprudence.
Mr. Stewart, this is Justice Kelsey. If I may interrupt with a question, following up on Justice Chaffin's question to Mr. Ingles, suppose there was a will that didn't specifically mention an option agreement. It will just said, look, I want all of my stock to go to you, and I want all of my horses to go to him, and I want out of my residual cash the value of the horses to go to Johnny. And there was no option. It was simply asking a probate court to put fair market value on an asset for purposes of determining access to the cash of the probate distribution. Now, that's not technically a meeting of the minds contract question, but it's mixed in with this question, because as Justice Chaffin pointed out, this is all coming out of a testamentary instrument.
I didn't understand that.
Wouldn't a probate court have the power to do that?
Absolutely, Justice Kelsey. And that's not the area of the law that I work in, but I assume that whomever is the administrator would file a suit for advice and guidance, you know, and the court would make that determination at the request of the proceed. But in this particular case, and it's an interesting issue that Justice Chaffin brought up, once the mother makes that declaration in her will, that's one thing. What we have here in this case is a suit for specific performance. And in suit performance, which is the equity side of the court, it takes the most certainty of any case, probably other than fraud, in order to compel someone to do this. So that's comparing apples to oranges. Never, in order to have a binding contract that can be specifically enforced, the two parties had to have a meeting of the minds. Price is one of the most essential elements of it, and we don't have that here.
I hear you. The question I'm puzzled over is, would a pure probate case come out differently than a pure contract case? And how does your mixed case confuse those two concepts? Because they're quite confusing when they're mixed.
I don't think it's confusing at all. Under the probate case, you're trying to give Johnny the cash value. The court has all the discretion to make that determination because, frankly, there's nowhere else to go but the court to make the decision. what you're talking about in this case is the right to contract, and the right to contract is sacred Constitution. And a court has no authority to compel one party to purchase at a certain price that the court determines. And that's the situation here, and that's the difference.
Well, and counsel, I wrestled with the same question, because with a contract, you have to have a meeting of the minds, and it's mutually enforceable between the contracting parties. With a will, you can always disclaim something. So if someone leaves you something that you don't want to pay for or accept, you can always just say, I don't want it, and it's a completely different analysis. But the way this comes up to us on appeal is framed as a question of contract. So I think that's what's in front of us, but I think we have to tread carefully so that whatever we decide in the issue before us doesn't have unintended consequences in a separate area of wills.
See your point, Colin, and frankly, it is an interesting point, but the case is certainly framed as a contract. Dispute that it ever became an actual contract. Certainly it is an option case, and the implications from the will I see, and certainly I think are distinguishable. It's interesting to me in this case that Mr. Ingalls on two different occasions has actually even admitted, both in his petition for appeal, page 6, paragraph 3, and his opening brief, page 8, paragraph 2, that these parties dispute the dollar figure or the price of this property. That, in my opinion, is the most essential element of this case. If the appellant acknowledges, admits in their legal pleadings, there certainly can be no contract that is specifically enforceable. And again, it's because fair market value is an amorphous term. And the court has hit on this earlier on, but there should have been clarity in that codicil. And if I had written that codicil or others, I think we learned this in law school. When you write something like this, it should have said fair market value as established by the average of 3 appraisers, the average of 2 independent appraisers, the average of, the value is assessed by 10%, but we don't have that clarity. Probably the most, and he talked a little bit about these other cases, but the most recent case that I've been able to find on this issue is the Holtzman Oil case, which was a case this court decided in 2016. It is unpublished, and frankly, I don't even know what that means, to be honest with you, the fact that it's unpublished. But the Holtzman case really does a good job of discussing this issue. Very, very similar. In that case, Holtzman Oil had an option to purchase 2 acres out of a 30-acre tract and a master plan. Lower court in that case sustained the demur to their action, specifically enforced that option. They sustained it about reason. This case did it. And actually, in Holtzman, the option said they had the ability to pick out 2 acres in their sole discretion out of the 30-acre plan. And this court determined that frankly was too ambiguous. And again, this court went on to say it's an elementary principle that a court of equity will not specifically enforce a contract unless it be complete. All the essential terms of the contract must be finally and definitely settled, none left to be determined by the future. And then it goes on to talk about how there's a greater degree of certainty when you are in a case for specific performance and equity, as opposed to an action at law where it's just damages. But I think that That is very important. It's very significant, this case, because we're faced with the same sort of circumstances. And I would submit to this court that if you had 10 appraisers that went up there and looked at this property, come back to 10 values, and that's it. You could even determine what the fair market value was supposed to be for, because it wasn't expressed in the codicil. It didn't say the fair market value for residential value, or the fair market value for commercial value, or the fair market value as a rental house. We don't know that because it wasn't expressed and it wasn't clear. If one of the justices of the court looked at that property, you would each have value. Fair market was firm, and we have to have parameters. Happy to answer any questions, but I'm not going to waste your time, and that's my argument.
All right, thank you, Mr. Stewart. Mr. Ingalls, you have 45 seconds remaining for rebuttal.
Thank you. In response to counsel's statement that the option did not indicate how fair market value was to be determined, I would cite the court to 2107.3, which uses the term fair market value and does not tell the divorce court what method to use to determine that. I would state that all of the out-of-state cases that I cited are equity-type cases where specific performance is being sought. I would say that the Holtzman case does not apply because it didn't have anything to do with establishing purchase price. Lastly, I would say that nobody compelled Mr. Mangano to write the letter saying he was going to buy the property and exercise the option. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your argument. The clerk will call the next case.